Lord Nitai and Lord Gaurachandra are very merciful. They are the essence of all incarnations. The specific significance of these incarnations is that they introduce the process of chanting and dancing that is simply joyful. My dear brothers, I request that you just worship Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda with firm conviction and faith. If one wants to be Krishna conscious by this process, he has to give up his engagement in sense gratification, becoming absorbed in worshiping Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, and simply chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, without any material motive. My dear brothers, just try to examine this. Within the three worlds, there is no one like Lord Chaitanya or Nityananda. The merciful qualities are so great. By hearing them, even birds and beasts cry, stones melt. But I, Lochan of Das, regret that I am trapped by sense gratification. I have no attraction to the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Therefore, Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, is punishing me by not allowing me to be attracted by this.
This is March 21st, 2019 in Melbourne. This is Gaur Purnima Day. Many years ago, I lived in the Boston Temple, and we used to have Chaitanya Charitamrita class once a week, and we would sing that song.
Parma Karma. That became one of my favorite songs.
When I used to run a preschool for children, it's one of the things that I
taught all the children. So, age
2 to 5. It was everybody learning that song.
So many wonderful songs about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. that we could learn today. Thank you very much for having me here. So I decided that I wanted to speak today on Majjhalila Chapter 8, the talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. And I've chosen this chapter because Krishnadas Kaviraj says that this chapter represents the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. So many times we use this word Siddhanta, yes? What is the goal of all perfection? The end, Siddha is perfection, and Anta means end. The end of all perfection. So generally what we mean by... Is there a problem with this garland in the microphone? Are we okay with that?
If you can do it,
better if I remove.
So generally when we say Siddhanta,
what we mean is the most essential, universally non-contextual aspects of our philosophy. The things that are true always, for all people, in all places, and all times, and all circumstances. So if you're familiar with the... Who's familiar with the four essential verses of the Bhagavatam?
This is a big Shastric hub in this time.
That's surprising. So the last of the four verses, the four essential verses of the Bhagavatam, are that one should study this, one should look for this absolute truth, study the absolute truth in all places, at all times. Is that a better microphone? Is that a better microphone? No. At all places, at all times, no matter who you are, where you are. So Siddhanta is that kind of truth.
It's the kind of truth.
Well, it can't be worse than this.
This microphone is connected to a live stream, so we can use this one. But then
this microphone is connected to,
but it goes off, and that's going to be very annoying for the people on your live stream. Your live stream people
are all going to quit.
Okay, then I can stop it if you like.
Well, I don't want you to stop it, but can't you get me a better mic?
I can get you, but then okay.
We'll do the get this one.
Okay. If I were watching live stream and the microphone were doing that, I would just turn it off. So you're not going to have any live stream people anyway, yes? Wouldn't you just turn it off if the sound was going off enough?
Sure.
Yes. All right, so this is not connected to anything?
No.
So now you're just cutting off the live stream?
No,
you take it from the phone, but the audio will be not so good.
Well, the audio will be better than that.
Yes.
The audio will be not so good. You know, there's a saying that when the great is the enemy of the good. You ever heard that? This is not what I plan to talk about today, but... The great being the enemy of the good. So sometimes, if you want something that's too high, you get nothing. Yeah, you understand? Sometimes it's better to settle for the good. There's an article I read some time ago about a woman who got into her 40s, never got married, she ended up deciding to have a child through, you know, some fertility treatment and raise the child alone. And she said there's too many women who don't, or men I'm sure also, who don't marry because they're waiting for, you know, Mr. Perfect, Miss Perfect. She said, just marry Mr. Good Enough. So, sometimes we have to go with the good enough microphone. Because the best is not available. Okay. In general in life, you know, don't let the great be the enemy of the good. Anyway, so when we talk about Siddhanta, we mean something that is true for all people at all times and all places, always. Ah, did they come? Did you get all three of them there? You both?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. We're going to try another mic?
No.
Okay.
This is Joseph.
So if you really think about it, There aren't that many. Did this just do that too?
I thought that was my imagination.
So there aren't that many philosophical statements that are true for everybody in all places, in all times, in all circumstances, eternally. Are there? Are there very many statements that are like that? So when Krishna says to Arjuna, stand and fight, is that a siddhantic statement?
No.
No. Nobody here believes that's a siddhantic statement because you're all sitting. And nobody's fighting. Was that funny? So if we all believe that that was a statement of Siddhanta, then 24 hours a day, we have to be standing up and fighting. We'd have a very interesting international society for Krishna consciousness. So most statements in the Shastra are not restatements of Siddhanta. Does that make sense to everyone? Or what about when Krishna says to Arjuna, for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Is that a siddhantic statement? No. And what does Krishna say just a little bit after that? He said one should be detached from honor and dishonor. So first he says, for those who've been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And then he says, be detached from honor and dishonor. So most statements by the Lord himself and by the great saints and sages are what we would call a contextualization of Siddhanta. They're taking something that's always true for everybody at all times, and they're expressing it for a particular person at a particular time and a particular circumstance. And there's a siddhantic statement kind of underneath it. When Krishna's telling Arjuna, stand and fight, that's an application of a siddhantic principle, or actually several siddhantic principles, but it's not the principle itself. Does everybody understand this? Yes? And much of what's in the Shastra is with happening within a context. It's being said by a particular person to another particular person at a particular time, and it has to be understood within that context. But we also need to know what is it that's true transcontextually, that's going to be true in every context, always, for all people. And that's what we call our Siddhanta. So Krishna Das Kaviraj has stated that these talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy represent our Siddhanta. Now, if you want to go to some... When do I have to end, by the way? There's no time I have to end. Well, all right. It's 8:40. How many people are okay with 9:30? Raise your hands if you're okay with 9:30. Okay, how many people are all right with 9:45? Okay.
10
o'clock. You want me to try that too? I'll aim for 9:30 to 9:40. So he's identified these talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy as our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. Now let's go to something even more interesting. Now one reason I'm bringing this up is I'm the chairperson of the Shastric Advisory Council to the GBC, and we're in the midst of working on a major project called Vaishnava Hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is how do you explain and understand Shastra. And we're going to be having our second major meeting on this, my goodness, in about 3 weeks. And one of the aspects of understanding Shastra, understanding the Acharyas, is that you compare every statement you're trying to understand to Siddhanta. So who of you have ever come across a statement from Prabhupada or Acharyas or the Shastra that you were like, what? Huh? How many of you have ever come to a statement like that? How many of you? Or are you all too embarrassed to say that? No, I perfectly understand everything I read all the time. Maybe I should ask that question. Does anyone here perfectly understand everything they read and hear from Prabhupada or Acharyas and the Shastra all the time? Well, that was a little bit better, okay. When I asked that question, then I got a unanimous. That must mean that there are certain things you read that you're like, what? What does that mean? What do I do with that? How do I apply it? Certain things we read, we have some doubts about. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, because
I don't have any doubts.
So therefore, we need a science for how to understand the statements of Guru Sadhu Shastra. That science exists. It's a traditional system. And part of that system is that whatever you... So you read, you hear something, and then you have a statement of Siddhanta, and you compare them. And you see, if this thing I read, if it's a restatement of Siddhanta, then it's transcontextually true. If it's not a restatement of Siddhanta, then you try to understand what is the context. And then there's a whole system for doing that, which I am not going to discuss today at all. We do hope to come out eventually with a training in these things that we can roll out to the society. So please bless us, that will be successful. But in order to make this comparison, there has to be a statement of Siddhanta. Does that make sense to everybody? Everybody follow the logic of this? Yes? Okay. Now here's where things get even more interesting. So we say, many times, in many places, if I put it over here, I'm less likely to hit the wire, that you can become Krishna conscious through any bona fide religious system. It's a good thing I know how to project my voice. I mean, I was right in the room where Prabhupada said that any religion where you're trying to know God and love Him, you can be successful. And Prabhupada said you can become Krishna conscious as a Christian. Yes, did he say that?
Yes.
Did you ever think about the implications of such statements? If you ask Christians or Muslims or Jews or other, even other Vaishnav Sampradayas, to give their understanding of universally transcontextual truth, would all of those statements from all those religious systems be the same?
No.
Well then, what does that mean? So some people will say that it means, well, it doesn't matter what you believe. Do you think that could be true? Do you think that's true, that it doesn't matter what you believe?
No.
Does anyone think that that's true? So we have a problem here. We have statements, repeated statements from Prabhupada, that you can attain perfection in any bona fide religious system. Am I correct about that? Am I correct? Yes. I heard Prabhupada say it with his own mouth. I was right there. But yet there's different beliefs. Now, is there a common belief to every genuine religious system? Are there any common beliefs?
Yes.
What would those common beliefs be? Somebody have some ideas?
Belief in God.
And some more. What are some more common beliefs to all the genuine religious systems of the world?
Nonviolence.
Mercy and kindness. I'm not sure about absolute nonviolence. Even we don't believe in absolute nonviolence. Yes?
You are the soul, you are not the body.
I don't know. I don't know if some religions would say you have a soul, and they're a little confused. Yes?
God is great.
God is great.
Fear of the Lord.
Fear of the Lord. All right. We also talk about fear of the Lord in the third canto.
There is another world.
There is another world. There's a kingdom of God. Very good. Okay. What else? What's a common?
Existence of higher authority.
Existence of higher authority, especially scriptures. Yes.
To be dependent on the mercy of the Lord.
Yes. To be dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Yeah? Yes?
We shouldn't sin. We shouldn't sin.
We shouldn't sin. Of course, how sin is defined will be a little different. Yes. We should follow the laws of God. We should obey God. Do you think every bona fide religion says you should love God?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Every bona fide religion said. So every bona fide religion says there is a God, there's one God. There's one God who is great, who has another reality, another world. We should follow his instructions, we should follow his laws, and we should love him. Yes, am I correct?
Right.
So those are statements. Do we need something else here? Do we still have a technical problem? Okay. Hopefully this will just like work, right? The videos you make here in Melbourne are the best in the world. Wherever I go in the world, everywhere I go in the world, every year, all the time, every single place I go, at least one person, if not 10, comes up to me and says, I saw that class you gave in. Why? Because the way we technically put it together is so first class. You set the standard for the whole world, and no one's beaten you on it yet. So there are Siddhantic statements that are common to all the world's religions that everyone could agree with. And therefore people following those religions could attain to God consciousness. But we have aspects of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta that are not in other world religions, as they have some that are not in ours. And our claim, which somebody could examine, as Krishna Das Kaviraj says, with all logic and reason, is that the Siddhantic statements we have that go beyond these general statements reveal a higher and more intimate, more varied understanding of God. And therefore, we can simultaneously say that one can attain to God consciousness through any of the bona fide traditions of the world. And therefore, we're not sectarian. We're not saying that we have a monopoly on truth. We don't say that you have to join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness or else you're going to hell. We do not even say you have to be a Gaudiya Vaishnava or else you're going to hell. We don't even say you have to be a Vaishnava or else you're going to hell. I hope nobody preaches like that. If you do, it's not correct. Again, I was in the room with Prabhupada when he was very clear on this point. But we can also say that if you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava, you have the opportunity in one life to attain a portion of the spiritual reality which is not generally available in most religious traditions. An inner portion, more intimate portion. You know, you can go from Vaikuntha to Goloka, you all know that, yes? It's in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and Prabhupada mentions it in Nectar Devotion. That if you attain to Vaikuntha, you can go beyond that to Goloka. But you can't go to Goloka if you don't know about it. You're not just going to end up finding yourself there. Because we go where we want to go, where we're cultivating, where our mentality is. So if someone's eternal form is to be in Goloka, but they don't know that, and they don't cultivate it because it's not available in their religious system, then it's going to take them more than one step on their journey to get there. Everybody follow this?
Yes.
Yes? Even when Gopakumar got to Vaikuntha, the residents there didn't know about Goloka. They didn't know. But he wasn't completely happy in Vaikuntha because he had an eternal relationship with Krishna, with Nanda Kumar. So it was Narada who had to say, ah, there's another realm. And interestingly enough, in order to go there, he had to leave Vaikuntha and come to Earth and practice Krishna consciousness on Earth and then go back and go to the Lord. So what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering right now in the Kali Yuga of all times is a non-stop flight. That was my intention yesterday, was to take a non-stop flight, but I ended up being in a city other than I had planned to be in. Very seriously. So I was like, oh, by the way, you're going there. I'm going there. My flight isn't out of there. Alright. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was offering a non-stop flight. Cheap. At a very good rate. You just can't take any luggage. You want to get the cheap rate, you have to, you can't, all you can bring is a passport. And your jumper beads, that's all. So the siddhanta that we're going to enter into in a minute or two is giving us access to a reality that's not available in most bona fide religious systems of the world. Now you can say, well, the other Vaishnava sampradayas know about it, that's a fact. Right? In the Balabha Sampradaya, they certainly know, although most of them now consider Vatsalya Balabhas. And certainly in the Sri Sampradaya, there's talk about Krishna and the gopis. Yes, those of you who come from the Sri Sampradaya, it's certainly there, but it's not the emphasis, am I correct? Those of you from the Sri Sampradaya. It's there, it's known. It's not like it's not known, but it's not the emphasis. I mean, even in Christianity, there's talk about what's called bridal mysticism. And there were Christian saints like Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, who, it certainly appears from their writings and their biography, entered into some kind of Madhurya Bhav. It certainly appears that. But that would be a very unusual situation, some kind of creepacy. But here this knowledge is being made available to everyone. So we're now going to look at one of the explanations, not the only one, but one of the explanations of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. So such an important thing to understand, because first of all, it tells us what are our most essential, highest truths. Second of all, it gives us our reason for being here rather than someplace else. If I believe, as I do, that any genuine religion can bring you to love of God, why am I here rather than someplace else? And I'm here rather than someplace else basically because of this chapter, because of this instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and because Srila Prabhupada embodied this in his own life and in his own general teachings. And it gives us an idea of what we should be aspiring for, what we should be focusing on. If we have this most wonderful, most inner secret jewel, then we need to be using it, yeah? Right? Does that make sense to everybody? So this is, we could very much say, the greatest gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya was advised, maybe, do we need these lights? Do you need these lights? You need the lights from my face. Okay, it's kind of dim for everybody. Is there any way at all to have a light on me but not everything on the screen? Is that possible? No.
The screen's fine.
The screen's fine?
Yeah.
Well, you can see it, but it's very faded.
That's fine.
It's fine. Okay.
It's good enough.
Huh?
It's good enough.
It's good enough. I deserve that. So Lord Chaitanya was told by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that when he was traveling through South India, he should meet Ramananda Roy. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after traveling, he went to the banks of the Godavari, and he saw Ramananda Roy, but he thought, it's not proper for me to go to him, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born in a Brahmin family, he was a sannyasi. Ramananda Roy was born in a Sudra family, and he was a grihastha. Children are fine. They don't have to be totally silent. They're fine, as long as they're not screaming. So generally, in Vedic culture, the senior person doesn't go see the junior person. The junior person has to see the senior person. You know, this is not true in modern Western cultures, right? If the parent says to the child, you know, hey, Raghu says, what? From the other room, right? And the mother has to go to see, or the father has to go to see the child. But that's not Vedic culture. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wasn't going to go to Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy came to him. And as soon as they met, they embraced, and they started crying. But there were also other Brahmanas there, and they're thinking, what's going on here? Why is some sannyasi crying, embracing this government official? Well, something's happening here, it's not quite right. This isn't normally what happens in our social system. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that these Brahmanas were disturbed and that they couldn't understand something higher. So he stopped his exhibition of ecstasy. This is an important point, that we need to tailor our presentations, our demonstrations of emotion and so forth, according to the audience. It also tells us that we should be very careful that we ourselves don't become like those Brahmanas. We definitely have a growing contingent in our ISKCON movement that is stressing social behavior and social relationships over spiritual reality. It's definitely happening. It's a push toward karmakanda. And although certainly Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashrama, we should be very, very careful that we don't prioritize it. Jnana karma anavrita. We shouldn't be covering our bhakti with karma. We certainly want to be pious people. We want to behave properly. But that's not our ultimate goal. We're not going to make spiritual life subservient to karmakanda, which is what these Brahmanas were doing. So they agreed to meet later without these disturbing people. And if we become absorbed in karmakanda to the point that it covers our bhakti, then Krishna consciousness will go on without us. You know, we may still be part of ISKCON, but the real river of nectar will be flowing in a distance from us. And we'll be having our big conversations about social relationships and etiquette and all these things, but we'll miss the Siddhanta. Everybody understand? Yes? So we'll be very, very careful. These things are important. It's not that they're not important. They are important. They're certainly important. But they don't have primacy. So Lord Chaitanya asked him, what is the goal of life? and Ramananda Roy said that you do your dharma for Vishnu. If you do your dharma in the ashramas and the varnas, then you will please Lord Vishnu. And that is the ultimate goal of life. So the thing is that this is true. Krishna says it's true. In fact, Ramananda Roy, to substantiate his argument, gave this verse from the Vishnu Purana, which is: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Varna and Ashrama. There is no other way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must be situated in the institution of the four Varnas and Ashramas. Now listen to this statement. There's no other way. But is that a statement of Siddhanta?
No.
No. It's a contextual statement. It's like a stand up and fight kind of statement. That to a particular person at a particular time, you might say, there's no other way to satisfy the Lord than to do your duties for His pleasure. And that statement would be absolutely true for that person at that time and that place. Does that make sense to everyone? Right? So your child's going to school. They're sitting in their classroom. Say, the only way you're going to satisfy Krishna is you do your studies to please Him. In that moment, that's true. Or you're working at your job or your business. And in that moment, the only way to please the Lord is to do your job for His pleasure. There isn't another way in that moment. Right? Yes? And this is a general truth for people in the material world. A general truth for people in the material world is that you should do your duties in the Varnas and Ashrams for His pleasure. Can someone tell me at what point in history this would not be true even on the earth?
End of Kali Yuga.
At the end of Kali, well, you're very close.
Satyuga,
at the beginning of Satyuga. Why, at the beginning of Satyuga, would this not be applicable?
Because all the mode of goodness and the Varnashram system helps people away from law and most of goodness.
Yes, everyone's in the mode of goodness, and there's no Varnashram system. Everybody is Hamsa. So Varna means how you make your living. But in the beginning of Satyuga, nobody needs to work for a livelihood. Just like even now, if you go to some places in the world, just like I've spent time in Hawaii, Prabhupada says Hawaii is left over from the previous Yuga. It's fast going into Kali, but anyway. So I have a devotee friend. Before she was a devotee, for 1 year, she intentionally lived homeless. She had no shelter, no job, and she gained weight. Because in Hawaii, there's wild avocado trees everywhere, and wild coconut trees everywhere. And you just bathe in the ocean or the rivers. It's always warm. Even when it rains, it's warm rain. You don't need a shelter. You don't need a shelter. You don't need agriculture. So Satyuga was something like that. The jewels were, you didn't need mines. The jewels were just coming out of the earth. You didn't need a livelihood. You didn't need a varna. And we didn't need government. Because everybody behaved. And there weren't even villages. That started with Prithu Maharaj. Everybody just lived wherever they wanted. And you didn't even need ashrams. I mean, obviously people must have had children. But you didn't need a system of ashrams. because everybody was just naturally devoted to the Lord. And people basically just meditated all the time. People just basically were in trance all the time. And when they needed to eat, they just picked an avocado. So there was no need for varnas and ashrams. There were basically no material duties. And so therefore, this verse wouldn't have been applicable even on this planet. And again, when Satyayuga rolls around, the same thing will happen. It will be applicable. Furthermore, this verse refers only to the body. What varna you have, what ashram you're in, has to do with the body and mind only. What determines your varna? What determines your varna is your body and mind. What do you like to do that you're good at? What do you do automatically, even if nobody pays you? Basically, your varna is what's needed in the world, what you can get paid for, what you can earn a livelihood by, what you love and what you're good at, all four of those things. That's what your varna is. It's what you do automatically because you love it and you're good at it. And then you use that to please the Lord and to benefit society. And that should be the way you maintain yourself. You should maintain yourself by what you love, what you're good at, and what's pleasing to the Lord and what benefits society. That should be your income stream. But what you love and what you're good at changes from life to life, my dear friends. It's not the same in every birth. Like Prabhupada had this dream that John Lennon was a great musician. And he said he's been practicing music for many, many lifetimes. But that doesn't mean that he's eternally a musician. You know, you might be an architect for many, many lifetimes, and then after a while you're like, I'm tired of this. And you get into something else. I mean, I had many reasons why I retired from being a teacher of children. The main reason was that I wanted to focus on creating materials for teachers. But also, it got to the point that it got boring. You know, it's like, okay, I've already done this. It got to the point that being better at your craft was so incremental. You understand? That there wasn't so much challenge in it anymore. It wasn't so much, you know, okay, and keep improving. After a while, we keep improving and keep improving. You know, you're putting out this effort and there's only this much. You understand? So we get like that, and in particular lifetimes, we practice something, and then we're like, okay, I've kind of mastered this. Obviously, you can never fully master anything, but after a while, it's like, been there, seen that, done that. Let me try something else. And sometimes you get into another occupation, another life, because you get into different modes. You know, you get into different modes, and so those occupations just aren't attractive to you anymore. If you go from the mode of ignorance to the mode of goodness, then, you know, you're just really not going to want to make shoes out of leather anymore. It just won't be attractive to you. So, and the ashram has to do mostly with age. Generally, like the Brahmacharya ashram is supposed to be for children and teenagers because it's the ashram of school, it's the ashram of education. So generally, education is for when you're young, yes? And then Grihastha ashram is for when you're in the prime of life. Grihastha ashram is for, you're supposed to produce children. Well, that's done at a certain time of life, when the desire is there, when the physical ability is there. So that's according to age. And then you retire in middle age. I mean, all over the world, even non-devotees retire in middle age, yes? And then old age, you prepare for death. Even if you don't know the ashram system, you're preparing for death in old age. And many times in old age, people do renounce the world just because they have to. Isn't that correct? The last year of my mother's life, she basically lived like a Babaji sannyasi because she had to, because she was so sick. She gave up her flat, gave away all of her possessions, moved into a nursing home, basically left society, left everything. You follow? So the ashrams are following the natural rhythm of life. Be a student when you're young, have children and have a livelihood when you're in the prime of life, retire and travel in middle age, and at the end leave everything and prepare for death. The ashram system simply spiritualizes the natural life cycle. It relates each part of the natural life cycle to God. But it still has to do with the body. It has to do primarily with the age of the body. And to some extent, the psychology. So Lord Chaitanya said, this is all maya. It's all external. It's not about the soul. The soul isn't... How old are you?
Nine.
So does that mean that your soul is nine? That you, the soul, are nine now? It's just the body. And when your body gets to be 19 or 29, that doesn't mean that you, the soul, have gotten older. So he said, this is all external. Therefore, it's not ultimate siddhanta, because it's changing. You know, right now you may be satisfying the Lord by coloring a picture of him. But most of us don't do that in our 30s and 40s. You know, it's not an eternal dharma. He said, that's external. See, he didn't say it's false. But it's something external. So then Lord Chaitanya says, all right, Krishna Karmapana. Sarva Satya. Satya is the goal. Sada, supreme. This will give you the supreme goal. If you simply do your karma for Krishna, offer the results of your activities to Krishna. And he gives this very wonderful verse, Yat Kiroshi Yat Nashi Yat. By the way, this verse almost exactly is in the book of Corinthians in the Bible. Almost the identical verse, word for word. So whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that as an offering unto me. So this goes beyond just do varnashram to please the Lord. Be a good person to please the Lord, understanding good in relationship to your body and mind. But give everything to Krishna. So why did Lord Chaitanya say that this was external? Any idea why Lord Chaitanya said that this is external? When I first read this, I was very confused. Yatkaroshi Yadanasi seems to me to be to cover everything. Why is it external? Any thoughts? It still refers to the body. It's still what you're doing with your body and mind. Give that to God. So now that's a very high principle. What percentage of people in the world would you say are actually doing that? Not very many. A very small percentage. Even in our ISKCON movement, I wonder how many of us really offer everything we're doing to Krishna. And still Mahaprabhu is saying, that's external. It's still based on the body. Now, what's interesting here is Ramananda Roy keeps getting rejected, but he doesn't give up and get discouraged. So if the Lord was speaking to you, or your guru was speaking to you and asking you a question, and you keep getting it wrong. I know as a teacher, if you ask people questions and they keep getting it wrong, they generally feel some shame. It kind of hurts their ego, and then they'll just stop. Or they'll say, well, I don't know. My eyes don't know. Okay. Ramananda Roy doesn't give up. He says, all right, swadharma tyaga, give up all your duties. All these external duties. Just give them up. I mean, many of us did that to join the Hare Krishna movement. I quit university. I left my family. And to me, the most extreme example of this is Shiva Ram Maharaj. He was married, and he had 2 weeks to finish his undergraduate degree, and he left. And he does not advise today to do that. But that's what he did. And his wife was even interested in Krishna consciousness, but not full on. She even was trying to, like, you know, make our recipes and offer them. And he's like, nope. She said, but I'm not ready. You're fully surrendered. Nope. Bye. He was his parents' only child. He said his mother just nearly went crazy. But that's what we did. Those of us who joined ISKCON in the 60s and 70s, that's typically what we did. We just swadharma tyaga. All right, bye-bye everything. You know, my poor mother. I mean, my father was supportive, but my poor mother. There were many days like that. What are you doing? So Ramananda Roy quotes a verse that occupational duties are described in religious scriptures. If one analyzes them, he can fully understand their qualities and faults and then give them up completely to render service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what does this mean practically for us? It means practically for us, although we may continue to do duties in the world according to our body and mind, we give up identifying with them. We stop thinking, you know, I'm a Brahmana, I'm a Shudra, probably we don't think like that. We probably think, you know, I'm a banker, I'm a teacher, I'm a computer programmer, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm a man, I'm a woman. It's all this talking is about women. And, you know, I was thinking how if you want to get a lot of views on Dandavas, have something about women in the title. Which says something about something that we're not going to say. But anyway, it's very interesting when one of the Prabhupada lady disciples asked Prabhupada, is it harder to be Krishna conscious if you're a woman? He said, only if you think that you're a woman. So if you think, I'm doing these duties because I'm a man, or I'm doing these duties because I'm a woman, or I'm doing these duties because I'm an Indian, or because I'm Australian, or because I'm somebody's son, or somebody's daughter, or somebody's husband, or somebody's wife, or I'm a brahmachari, I'm a grahastha, I'm a good brahmachari. I'm a good grahastha. I'm a good woman. I'm a good man. It's all rubbish. Because we're not any of those things. It's like trying to be a good dolphin. It's not what we are. We should be doing everything because we're trying to please Krishna. And externally, we may appear that we're doing duties in the Grihastha Ashram or the Vanaprastha Ashram or the Sannyasa Ashram or as a woman or as a man or whatever, as an Australian. But that's just superficial. I compare it to the cover identity of a spy. You know, that our real mission is just to please Krishna. Now, interesting, the verse that Ramananda Roy quotes here, everybody knows this verse, right? Sarvadharma, let me say it together. Sarvadharma, Vritya, Jama, Ekam, Sharma, Purta, Sarvapapa, Now, in the Gurukula, we learned 48 key Bhagavad Gita verses, and this, of course, was the last one that we would learn. So once a week, the children would recite all 48 verses along with the translations. And I think it was my youngest son who started this, but they started to sing the translation to the same verse. So they go, Sarvadama, Bridja, Jama, Makeup, Sarvadama, Pradama, Talk, Sarvapa, Yoga, Shri, Shabi, Masacha, abandon all varieties of religion, and just surrender unto me, I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Okay, now this has got to be okay with Lord Chaitanya, right? I mean, isn't this the essence of everything, just surrender? And so many times Srila Prabhupada will be bringing this one up as, this is it, you know? That's it, if you just surrender to Krishna, immediately, fully, you'll get all perfection, immediately, fully, and Lord Chaitanya says, that's external. Why is Lord Chaitanya saying that that's external? Anybody have any idea?
It refers to the social dharmas.
It does refer to the social dharmas. Sarvadharma Krishna. Now again, when Krishna is saying this to Arjuna, he's not saying externally give up your dharma, is he? Because did Arjuna do that?
No.
Did he walk away from his varna of being in the government and on the battlefield? Is that what he did? Did he walk away from his grahastha life? Did he leave Subhadra and Draupadi? No. So by this sarva dharma prachaja, Krishna is saying, give up your identity with these things. Keep doing them, but do them as my servant instead of in terms of that identity. But why is it external? It doesn't go to what is my real identity besides just that I'm part of Krishna. Mama Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Vudasnatana, does it? So Ramananda Roy then tries Gyanamijra Bhakti. Such as Sada. Sada means the supreme. Okay, don't just give up your duties, but understand that you're a soul. Not just, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, but I'm a soul. And he quotes another verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuti Prasanatmana Sojatina Kanchati Sama Sobeshu Bhuti Shuma Bhakti Bhavate Puram, which interestingly comes before the Sarvadharma Purchita verse. Be a self-realized soul, understand. I am the Atma. I am the soul. I am not the body. Oh my goodness, what does Lord Chaitanya say? That's also external. Why do you say that's external?
Because he doesn't have the purpose of the soul only knowledge.
What? Yes, yes, it's just the knowledge that I am a soul. It doesn't involve the activities of the soul. It doesn't really involve the personality of the soul. It's not full knowledge of the soul at all. So then Ramananda Roy, who doesn't give up, doesn't get discouraged, he says, okay, bhakti without jnana. Join the Hare Krishna movement and learn how to fly. There's actually a very famous impersonalistic meditation system that says that if you do their meditation, you'll learn how to fly. Did you know that? It's a big advertisement. We already know how to fly. So then he quotes another verse. This is Lord Brahma, who says, those two, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So this is part of Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna after he had stolen the cows and the cowherd boys. Oh, finally, Lord Chaitanya says, all right, that's okay. He doesn't say that's good, he says, it's okay. It's all right. One, because now we're at the platform of pure bhakti. Now we're at anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karma anavritam. Anukula krishna anushivam bhakti ritamam. Now we're at the point of bhakti without anything else mixed with it. Bhakti without any bodily or mental designations. Even bhakti without just like, oh, I'm a soul. I'm a soul. Without that, and especially that wonderful verse to be absorbed in the narrations of the Lord. But Ramananda Roy can understand that even though Lord Chaitanya said that's okay, it wasn't the end. So he says, prema bhakti. Now, this is a very important point. You can be in pure bhakti and not be on the platform of prema. When we say a pure devotee, that can mean different things. A pure devotee can mean someone who's on the platform of prema and is free from all material desires, but it can also mean a beginner in the process of pure devotion. Just like if you have a mango tree and you see the little teeny tiny mango that just started, you can say, that's a mango, right? You take your kids out to the tree and say, look, that's a mango. Right, if you're growing some pumpkin, you have a big squash plant, and the little pumpkin starts to grow at the end of the flower. Right, you're doing a garden with your kids, and you bring them out to the garden, and you say, look, 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 there's a pumpkin. Would anybody eat that pumpkin? No, it's too small. It's not mature, but it's a pumpkin. So anyone who's in the process of pure bhakti is a pure bhakta. They may be an immature pure bhakta, but they're still a pure bhakta. So if the main reason why we're here in the Krishna consciousness movement is to develop love for God, then we're in pure bhakti. If we're not covering our bhakti with karma jnana yoga, we're following the authorities, we're following the process given in the scripture, then we are pure devotee. Isn't that nice? Yes? And therefore Prabhupada said, all my disciples are pure devotees. Does everyone understand that? Is that clear? But also, if you say pure devotee, you can mean somebody who's fully mature. Like if you say, I'm going to make pumpkin soup, that meant with a mature pumpkin. It didn't mean the little teeny tiny pumpkin. Yes, everybody's clear about that? Everybody understands that? You can say, that's a pumpkin, to the little tiny pumpkin. And that's true. And, you know, if the woman says to her husband, please buy me a pumpkin to make pumpkin soup, and he comes back with that, she says, what are you doing? So here Ramananda Roy quotes a wonderful verse. He said, as long as there is hunger and thirst within the stomach, varieties of food and drink make one feel very happy. Similarly, when the Lord is worshipped with pure love, the various activities performed in the course of that worship awaken transcendental bliss in the heart of the devotee. So he's talking about prema. Then in prema, there's an attraction, there's a thirst, there's an interest. One's not serving just out of faith and conviction, but one is serving out of love. Then one feels great bliss. And he quotes a verse from the Pajavali, when the Lord is worshipped with pure love, the various activities performed in the course of that worship awaken transcendental bliss in the heart of the devotee. It can be attained by obtaining one price, that is intense greed to obtain it. If it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. This is what we're trying to do in our Hare Krishna movement, is develop an intense desire. This is what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita 12.9, that we're doing our abhyas yoga, our practice yoga, to develop icha, to develop desire. And when this desire to please the Lord is intense, that is prema. And Lord Chaitanya says, yes, that is all right. Now, if I were Ramananda Roy, I would have just said, you know, I don't know what you want here. You're our customer. Maybe you should stop somewhere else. Ramana keeps going. He says, Dasya Prem. Now he starts getting into the actual varieties of personal relationships with the Lord. Not just, I want to love God. And here is where we start to go beyond the basic siddhantas that are given in all the world's religions. This is where we're starting to go to another realm. And Ramananda Roy quotes Bhagavatam 9.5.16. He said, what remains to be attained by those who have become his servants? This is Rakdatin Patra. Well, this is a very high level. Most of us in this world don't like the idea of being a servant. Did any of your parents say, now when you grow up, I want you to be a servant? Any of your parents say that? That would be the highest perfection, you know, just be a servant, somebody's servant. Anybody's parents? They tell you if you're really successful, you'll have servants. Right? One of the signs you know you've made it in the world. Somebody comes and cleans your house. Correct? Now you be a servant. So most of us in this world, we rebel against this idea of being a servant. So to have so much love for the Lord that we're just as happy to be his servants. And Lord Chaitanya said, that's all right. Sakya praying to be the friend of the Lord. And here, Ramananda Roy quotes 10, 12, 11 of the Bhagavatam. It says, certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys. So in friendship, when you're friends with someone, you think that person is your equal. So somebody mentioned that all religions will say God is great. So I just spent the last week in Malaysia, which is a Muslim country. So we hear the call to prayers, right? And in the call to prayers, they're saying, Allah Akbar, God is great. Even when I was just before that in Mayapur for a month, so there, where I was staying was right off the edge of the property. And you could also hear the Muslim call to prayers from the nearby mosques. And so every day, five times a day, they're saying, God is great. But those in Sakya Prem, do they think God is great? No. They're like, you didn't hold up the hill. We did. You're not so great. We're stronger than you. We'll prove it to you. We'll wrestle with you. They take Krishna's samosas that Mother Yasoda sent from home, that Mother Rohini made, and they say to Krishna, hey, Krishna, there's a monkey over there, and then they take the samosa off his leaf blade, and they take all the vegetables out of it, and they put jasmine flowers in it, and put it back on his plate. Don't try this with the deities. You know, they say, Krishna, close your eyes, open your mouth, we'll give you a surprise. And they stick a chrysanthemum in his mouth. A sunflower? Because they're thinking he's an equal. Like Arjuna said, yeah, we were laughing and joking, sitting on the same level. No, I know in Australia everybody sits on the same level. It's part of the rudeness in Australia. For those of you from India, you don't do that. Must be one of the cultural difficulties coming from India to Australia. The heavy egalitarianism of the Australians. Yeah, we're all just friends, right? You know? Nobody's higher or lower. And that's the mood of Krishna's friends. We're all just friends. hey buddy, you know. They steal Krishna's lunch. They steal Krishna's lunch. Again, don't try this, please. That's what they do. They push him around, they push him in the dirt, they wrestle with him, they steal his lunch, they tease him, they insult him. I mean, they also praise him. Oh, you killed the demon, yay! And they think, I wonder who he is, maybe he's a demigod. Oh, you know, if he's a demigod, then so are we. So now Lord Chaitanya says, oh, that's very good. Why did he finally go to that's very good? Because now we're at this level of intimacy. And now we've really crossed the border between the tenets and the Siddhanta that's agreed upon by every world religion and what we are presenting. Now we've really crossed beyond. You can have so much love for God that you see him as your equal, you forget that he's God. In most religions, they would consider that heresy. They would consider that offensive. We say, no, God likes intimate friends. He doesn't always like to be royalty. Don't we like intimate friends? Yes? So Ramananda Roy couldn't stop there, but he went on. He said, there's Vatsalya Prema, which is the highest thing. And he quotes Bhagavatam 10.9.20, the favor Mother Yasoda obtained from Sri Krishna, the bestower of liberation, was never obtained, even by Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, nor even by the goddess of fortune, who always remains on the chest of the Supreme Personality. So this is even more intimate. Now you see God as your subordinate. Not just your equal, but your subordinate. To the point Mother Yasoda is chastising him. She's tying him up. She's instructing him. Right? It says one time Jagannath Mishra was really heavily rebuking Lord Chaitanya, and then he had a dream where this Brahmin appears to him and said, don't you know your child is Narayan? And he said in the dream to the Brahmin, I don't care who he is, he's my son. I have to train him nicely. So that's even more intimate. And your child is a part of your body. So it's a very, very intimate relationship. And certainly, you're friends with your parents. I mean, hopefully, I'll even know. But ideally, you know, in the ideal situation, your children are also your friends. Your parents are also your friends. I mean, I think of my children and my grandchildren as my friends. But it's a much more intimate type of friendship than ordinary friendship. Oh, that's Uttama, that's very good. But Ramananda Roy goes beyond, and he says, the prema of kanta, the prema of being the lover, this is the highest. And he quotes Bhagavatam 10.32.2, suddenly, due to their feelings of separation, Lord Krishna appeared among the gopis, dressed in yellow garments and wearing a flower garland. His lotus face was smiling, and he was directly attracting the mind of people. So we can say that the child is part of our body, but among lovers and beloved, you really feel like that person is half your body. Like it's described many places in the Bhagavatam, that the wife is considered half the body of the husband.
Better half.
Better half. I didn't want to make the men feel better. It actually says that in the Bhagavatam, that the wife is the better half. I was talking the other day to a recently married man, and he said, I feel like my wife is one of my limbs. He says, I feel like that before I met her, I was missing part of my body. Now I feel complete. So it's that kind of intimate relationship, right, where you're like one person, practically speaking. and complete intimacy and freedom on every level. Now, Ramananda Roy says it is true that whatever relationship a particular devotee has with the Lord is the best for him. Still, when we study all the different methods in a neutral position, we can understand their higher and lower. Now, this is also very, 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 very important. Each of us has our own eternal relationship with the Lord. According to Prabhupada says in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, when he talks about the same section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he calls it our aptitude, or our choice. We, the soul, choose, eternally choose. It's not that we choose at a certain point in time exactly, but we eternally choose a particular relationship with the Lord. There's a way we want to relate with the Lord, and that way is best for us. Just like materially, we have a nature. In this life, we have a particular nature, and that nature is what's best for us. And trying to force ourselves to have someone else's nature never works. Some of us are more shy and reserved, some of us are more outgoing, some of us are more people persons, some of us are more task persons, some of us are more cautious, some of us are more risk-taking. We have a particular nature, which comes from the choices we've made over various lifetimes. And that's nature's best for us. We function best when we function in that nature. So we have an eternal nature that's our eternal choice, that's an eternal expression of who we are and who we want to be. It's not that everybody should be a gopi. Some people don't want to be gopis. Some people want to be a flower. Some people want to be a friend. And Krishna wants all those relationships. Krishna doesn't just want gopis. I mean, even in this world, we like the fact that we have a relationship with our parents and our children and our spouse and our friends. Yes? We don't want everyone to be our child or everyone to be our mother or everyone to be our husband. That would be a little weird. I mean, we want these varieties of relationships. So Krishna also wants varieties of relationships, yes? And each soul has this natural aptitude. But if you look at it from the point of view of intimacy, you can say one is more intimate. Better in that way. Not better for the individual. And not really better in any sense that we can think of materially. What Ramananda Roy says that the qualities increase. In Manji 886, he said the taste also increases. He said, so the qualities in neutrality are all found in servitorship, and all those qualities are found in friendship, and all those qualities are found in vatsalya, and all those qualities are found in madhurya. So in madhurya are all the qualities of all the other rasas. Lord Krishna has made a firm promise for all time, if one renders service unto him, Krishna correspondingly gives him an equal amount of success in devotional service. So this is our siddhanta. And then Lord Chaitanya said, this is the limit of perfection, but maybe you can tell me something more. Now this is also interesting. It's the limit, but maybe you can tell me something more. Alright, well now it is 9:45. So we've now reached the limit, so we could end here. Who would like to go on to 10 and know something more? Not all of you. Some people would like to leave. So if any of you would like to leave, that's okay, because now we've reached the limit. But if you'd like to, although we've reached the limit, go beyond the limit and hear something more, we'll go for a few more minutes. Ramananda Roy said, among all those who see Krishna as their beloved, Radharani is the topmost. And when he said that, Lord Chaitanya said, that for which I have come to your residence has now become an object of truth in my knowledge. He says, nevertheless, I think there's something more ahead, and my mind is desiring to have it. Kindly explain the transcendental features of Krishna and Radharani, the truth of transcendental mellows, and the transcendental form of Krishna. So Ramananda Roy first says, no one's ever asked me for anything beyond this before. We're taking me to new territory. So he starts describing Krishna. He says Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's the spiritual, ever-fresh Cupid. There are some amazing verses here in Madhya 8 about the original form of sexual desire. I'll refer you to 138 and 139, and to a class I gave here in Melbourne some years ago on that topic, which you can find online, which I will not repeat today. But that everything that exists in this world exists in Krishna. Everything. Even this. This is also something not well understood by most of the world's religions, isn't it? There's some glimpse of it there, but not well understood. Now again, he repeats this concept that each and every devotee has a particular relationship with the Lord. So he really wants to make it clear, whatever your relationship is best for you. But he says the topmost expression of love is Mahabhava, and that is represented by Srimati Radharani. Says all day, all night, Krishna enjoys being with Radharani. And yet, there's union and separation. There's a kind of separation that gives even more ecstasy than meeting. And Lord Chaitanya said, this is the limit of everything. That's it. The love of Srimati Radharani and the fact that in separation there can be more ecstasy than in meeting. That's the limit. But now I have something else I'd like to ask you, a different topic. How do I get it? So if you finally find what's the best of 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 the best, what do I do to achieve it? Ramananda Roy said, if you want to achieve this Madhurya Bhav, you have to get it from the gopis. You have to get it from those who have it. Now this is a general principle that we can only get love for Krishna from the devotees. Without devotees we wouldn't know about Krishna, without devotees we wouldn't know the process of attaining Krishna, and when you come to the higher levels of bhakti, without the devotees you just can't attain. The difference in sadhana bhakti, even between regulated sadhana bhakti and spontaneous sadhana bhakti, is that spontaneous sadhana bhakti, you're following a particular devotee who has the same mood that's awakened in your own mind. So, those who want to attain this transcendental kanta prema, they have to follow the gopis and take shelter of the gopis. Now, what does that mean to take shelter of the gopis? Well, it certainly means to meditate on their pastimes, but it also means to imbibe their mood. And he says their mood is that they're happier when Krishna is enjoying with another gopi than they are when Krishna is enjoying with them. This mood is completely against our materialistic mood. If you have brothers and sisters, you know, you're like, hey, why aren't you paying attention to me? Why are you just with my sister? Why are you just with my brother? Or people who kill each other, you know, oh, my husband's gone to another woman, I'll kill her, I'll kill him. But the mood of the gopis is, I want Krishna to be happy. And you see, each jiva has a particular flavor to offer to Krishna. I can only offer Krishna my flavor. I can't offer Krishna your flavor. So I also want Krishna to taste your flavor of bhakti. Now this mood is prevalent to some extent even in Vaikuntha, where the flowers with different colors and fragrances offer obeisances to Tulsi, who appears by comparison externally to be very plain and a very slight flavor. Or the birds offer their obeisances to the bees, who aren't as colorful and just Even in Vaikuntha, everyone is pushing other devotees forward to give service, to make Krishna happy. It's this mood of the gopis. Radharani's pushing the gopis to Krishna. The gopis are pushing Radharani to Krishna. And they enjoy millions of times more. Oh, now Krishna's happy. It was someone who can give him some other food. And I can give him. This mutual behavior in love with Godhead pleases Krishna so much. We should be exemplifying this mood in ISKCON. That we glorify other devotees' service, that we empower other devotees, we make other devotees feel intelligent and competent, not that we walk in the room, everybody just thinks how intelligent and competent we are. I mean, even in worldly events, even in business and education, they talk about the diminishers and the multipliers. The diminishers are someone they walk in the room and everybody feels very small. Oh, that's a great person, I feel very small. The multipliers is somebody makes everybody else feel empowered. And even they move to the background. You know, Srila Prabhupada did that. 1970, he established the GBC. And he moved more to the background. In fact, that's the only way we're really going to have a vibrant, expanding movement is when we empower people and empower people and empower people and move to the background and glorify others and glorify others and not try to put ourselves at the center. That I'm doing the best service and I'm doing the most important service and I'm the most intelligent and I'm the only one who knows how to serve Krishna. Following the mood of the gopis isn't just some like, oh, the gopis, and did you hear that pastime? Oh, did you hear this pastime? Oh my God, this new book of Gopi Leela, and have you seen it? It's not just that. It's this mood of the gopis. And let me bring other people to Krishna consciousness. It's our mood of preaching. It's our mood of empowerment. It's our mood of, oh, let Krishna be happy with that person's service. Therefore, they have no desire for their own sense gratification. They're just thinking of Krishna's happiness. Now, if we think about that materially, we think of, well, if I never looked out for myself, that would be pretty awful. Because materially, it's a fact. If I just want to please someone and forget about myself, I'll probably get exploited. But I'm part of Krishna. I'm part of Krishna. It's like if my hand just tries to put food in my stomach, my hand doesn't need to worry about its own nourishment. My hand doesn't need to say, well, okay, I'll give the mouth some of the chapati. But I gotta keep some for myself. I mean, it's really interesting. A lot of beauty products are made out of food, isn't it? Aren't there a lot of beauty products that are made out of food? Yes? And you take the food and you just rub it on your body. Yes? Isn't that interesting? But of course, if you really ate a very healthy diet, which is kind of hard at the present time, you probably wouldn't need to rub the food on your body. So the devotee gives everything to Krishna because they're fully satisfied by giving everything to Krishna. Not that they're like, I gave everything to Krishna, now there's nothing for me. Like that. You know, you give everything to Krishna, you're actually fully satisfied because you're part of Krishna. And again, Ramananda Roy goes back to this concept that everyone has their own relationship. That the devotee gets attached to Krishna in a particular relationship. And as we serve the Lord in that relationship, we attain the awakening of our corresponding body. So in the higher stages of sadhana, when that natural relationship awakens in us, then we serve in that mood, and that reawakens our original body. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy with Ramananda Roy, They met for many nights to discuss this philosophy. Of course, they had some other discussions, which we're not going to speak about today, where he asked, like, who's the most famous and what's the best song and that kind of thing. And you can go to Moji 8 if you'd like and read the best about it yourself. But I thought we would take the essence of the Ramadan Sangha, that to go to this Ardesit Gaudiya Siddhanta. So we are so, so fortunate that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And appeared recently, just a little more than 500 years ago. And he's brought to us, he's brought to a very materialistic age. Everything is polluted, everybody fights about anything. Yes? People fight just to fight, they don't even know what they're fighting about. Even in the Hare Krishna movement. What's the new thing I can fight about today? It's the age of quarrel, I gotta get into it. You know? So he brought to us the highest, 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 highest. Not just the general Siddhanta, there's one God, God is great, you should follow him, you should love him. He got to Prema Bhakti, he said, oh, there's more. But it was this deepest, highest understanding. So certainly we worship Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with kirtan, with our japa, with our preaching, with our cooking. And the main way we're going to worship Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to really fully take advantage of what he's given us. And really immerse ourselves in this highest, most intimate, most wonderful understanding of our Siddhanta. So thank you very much, those of you who stayed all night. 5 more minutes. Oh, we also brought some books with us here. So, if any of you are interested, do we have a table with books on there in the room?
Outside.
Okay. So, I taught Manashiksha here before, yes? So, this is written by Raghunath Das Goswami. Now, by the way, this Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj got everything in the Chaitanya Charitamrita from Raghunath Das Goswami. Everything. Raghunath Das Goswami brought with him the diaries of Swarup Damodar. How does anyone know these talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy? They came from Ramananda Roy once he came to Jagannath Puri talking about them. Swarup Damodar writing them in his diary, and Raghunath Das Goswami bringing that diary with him to Radhakund, which is where Krishna Das Kaviraj was, and they had their bhajan kutis right next to each other, and every afternoon they would sit, and Krishna Das Kaviraj was going over these diaries, and that's how he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this book was written by Raghunath Das Goswami in Radhakund, and it explains in detail the process of attaining this ultimate goal of life. And we had some beautiful artwork done specifically for this book. It's got Bhaktivinoda's commentary, which also has many illustrations. It has commentary also of Shivaram Maharaj, Sachinanda Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Swami, Jayadurta Swami, and myself. And there's also a chapter here explaining what is this inner process of attaining this highest level of devotion. So I think we have this for sale only $20 for this book. That's a really good deal. No, seriously. Like, if you get this in America, it comes in 2 volumes instead of 1, and it's $25 for the 2, and that's paperback. So you have a hardback, $20. And all the profits go to the temple, by the way. And then, for those of you who want some light, fun reading, I've written a Krishna conscious novel. It's fiction. And it's based on Jed Bard's instruction to Maharaj Rubina about the forest of enjoyment. The first 2 parts are based on that. The 3rd part is based on Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And the 4th part is based on Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha. So I've taken the allegories given there and I've woven a novel around it. So it's not a children's book, it's an adult book. I think kids would have to be at least like 12 to understand it. And it's also illustrated. I've written this in language for the general public, so that means this is a book that you can give to non-devotee family and friends, but many ISKCON sannyasis told me they cried when they read it. So, and it goes all the way up to Krishna Prema. So it's not just a beginning book, although it's written in language for the general public. It's bringing the highest limits of Arsananta to the general public. That was my goal in that. And I have some people interested in making a Hollywood movie out of it. If you give me your... I have no idea how that's going to happen, so give me your blessings. And this is 10 Australian dollars. That's also really good. America sells for, I think, 12 US dollars. And then we have this book on how to chant Hare Krishna without offense. Very simple, easy to read book, also illustrated. And this is just for 5 Australian dollars. And if you get all 3, you can take $5 off.
Right.
And I'll be happy to sign it for you. So thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.